commandment that I command you this day, it is not too extraordinary for you. It is not too far away. Rather, near to you is the word, exceedingly, in your mouth and in your heart to observe it. See, I set before you today life and good, death and ill. Follow the Lord's commandments, that the Lord your God may bless you. Please be seated. I feel angry today. I feel angry and ashamed about our culture and our failures because I'm part of it. Just last week, in great joy, we remembered the anniversary of when rebellious aristocrats decided to challenge the political power of their mother country. And we celebrated the fact that they were followed by countless generations who strove to survive, to build homes and communities. Generations who fought and who died, both to defend our rights and to expand them. And while I have to admit that we have not always been in the right, that we have sometimes been squarely in the wrong, we do seem eventually, to move toward greater good, toward greater justice and greater equity. We fought a civil war to defend economic interests. We fought civil rights to maintain political dominance. We craft law and economic policies that keep control. How's that working out for us? The we I refer to for most of our nation's history has not been Native Americans. The we has not been blacks or Latinos. It has been whites. And more recently, the we is a completely new kind of person in this country, the corporation, whose power to shape law and policy and choose political leaders may very well have surpassed the power of the people. I am angry and I am ashamed that our culture has come to this point where we fear and mistrust anybody we don't know, dehumanize them, reduce them to something easy to press down and push aside. It is not what the Scripture said today. The church values Scripture because it is the foundation and the source of our relationship to God and our principal guide for living. Do love God. Do love your neighbor as yourself. Keep the Sabbath. Honor your parents. Do no murder. Do no theft. Do no untruth. Just as Jesus responded to the lawyer, in the law, what is written? And how do you interpret it? He said, what do you read there? But he's a lawyer of Torah. He knows what is written in the law. Jesus wants to know if he understands what is written in the law. The lawyer says, you will love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength, and your neighbor is yourself. But one more question, Jesus. Who is my neighbor? That's the same thing as asking, who is not my neighbor? Who is it that is not my neighbor? Whose oppression and whose suffering may I ignore? Whose poverty and hunger can I walk right past? Which people may I hate and still be right with God's law? Tell me, Jesus. So Jesus tells us this parable. and he interprets God's intention in its absolute, fullest expression of holiness. Many call this story the parable of the Good Samaritan, as if all Samaritans were bad, but this one was good. I reject that. Let's call it the parable of the enemy. Or, to really get a sense of what it really meant to first century Jews, the parable of the ISIS fighter. Because that is how the Israelis viewed the Samaritans. They were so bad, so hated, that you wouldn't want one to help you, even if your life depended on it. The lawyer got a lot more than he bargained for. Because according to Jesus, my neighbor, your neighbor, is every single human being. Even our most hated enemy, whose name we detest. God expects you and me to do acts of mercy to our enemy, no less than we do to our fellow citizen, to the alien, the illegal immigrant, to our friends, to our own family. To do less is to fail. Cruising around on Facebook yesterday, I came across this quote, and some of you probably did as well, by Dorothy Day. She said, "I really only love God as much as I love the person that I love the least." And to be clear, loving has nothing to do with liking. Nowhere in Scripture does Jesus say, or God, you need to like your neighbor at all. Loving is about what we do, not what we feel. It's about taking action to save life. That is what God requires of us now. That is what God will always require of us, to take action to save life, to save the half-dead. So I ask you, what might God require of us today, right now, in light of what is happening in our nation? This much I know. A black man of my age and of my education and of my wealth, a black priest of the Episcopal Church, in fact, he is not treated the same way that I am by our culture. That is a fact. It is wrong. It must change. In a discussion on race relations that I recently listened to, a facilitator asked a mostly white audience, pretty much like this one, a very difficult thing. She said, and I quote, "Would every white person in this room who would be happy to be treated as this society in general treats our black citizens, would you please stand?" No one stood. So after a minute, she said, "Oh, I'm sorry, you must not have understood the instructions. If you would be happy to switch places with any black person in our country and be treated the way our culture treats them, please stand up." And no one stood. It's a hard thing. And then she said this, "Nobody is standing here." That says very plainly that you know what is happening. You know you don't want that treatment for you or your children or your grandchildren. So what I want to know is, why are you so willing to accept it and allow it to happen for others? She uses no theological language, no reference to Jesus or the law of Moses or anything. But she just preached love of neighbor. Just like the priest and the Levite, you and I are required by God's revelation to act for the welfare and the life of all people. Not to do so is what the priest and the Levite did. It is what I've done when I've walked past a homeless man on the street, or changed the channel when the news was just too darn disturbing. You see, that's my privilege. I get to do that. To ignore another person's pain. To ignore the half-dead in our community. But that clearly isn't right, and it clearly isn't the gospel of Jesus Christ. We reap what we sow. I believe that. And sooner or later, what we have seen occur again and again in other parts of this country will occur in this community. It will. So I suggest that we have a role to play in the work of reconciliation, the work of Jesus, the hard work of listening to the pain of those in our community who are simply afraid to live in this society. Blacks, Muslims, gays, lesbians, all God's children who suffer oppression that I have never known simply because of my skin color, my wealth, and my sexual orientation. What is called for is prayer, and much, much more than prayer. What is called for is relationship building, no matter how hard or how costly. You see, that's what the Levite and the priest were supposed to do. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. has, I believe, the best explanation of why they walked on by. He said that they asked the wrong question. They asked this: if I stop and help this man on the side of the road, what will happen to me? They were supposed to ask, if I do not stop and help this man on the side of the road, what will happen to him? If we Episcopalians do not stop and love those in this community who feel half dead, what will happen to them? What is happening to them? What is happening to us when we walk past? Will there be resurrection or will there be death? Will there be wellness in our community or will there be illness in our community? At the end of this parable, the lawyer is asked, which of the three did what he was supposed to do? And the lawyer said, he couldn't even utter the word Samaritan, he hated him so much. He said, that one who showed mercy. And the last word that Jesus speaks to you and to me today is this: go, you, and do likewise. Go into the world and do what is required of you.